Chapter 1. Inauguration. The sun was about to sink below the line where sea and sky met, 4 or 5 leagues to the west. The weather was fine. To the east, a scattering of small clouds absorbed the last rays that would soon fade in the long high-latitude twilight, 55 degrees south of the equator. The solar disk was only half visible when a cannon sounded aboard the Santa Fe. The flag of the Argentine Republic unfurled in the wind and rose to the head of the sloop's mainmast. At the same instant, a bright light broke from the lighthouse, a gunshot distance behind the narrows of Elgor Bay, where the Santa Fe lay at anchor. Two of the lighthouse keepers, together with the workmen on the beach and the crew, assembled on the foredeck, greeted with long cheers the first light to shine out from this remote coast. 2 more cannon shots answered, their detonations reproduced several times by the loud echoes. The sloop struck her colours in accordance with the rules governing warships, and Staten Island, where the waters of the Atlantic met the Pacific, fell silent once more. The workmen quickly boarded the Santa Fe, where they would spend this final night, leaving the 2 keepers alone on shore, for the 3rd remained aloft at his post. They did not go back to their lodgings, but chatted while strolling along the bay. "Well, Vasquez," said the younger one, "tomorrow the sloop's setting off." "Yes, Felipe. I hope our voyage home goes smoothly." "It's a long way." "No longer than getting here." "You don't say," Felipe shot back, amused at his comrade's answer. "Well, my lad," said Vasquez, "sometimes it does take longer to get there than to come home, unless the wind helps you along, that is. 1,500 miles is nothing with a good engine and a good wind. And Captain Lafayette knows the way like the back of his hand. And a direct route it is, lad. He sailed south to come here, and he'll sail north to get back. And if that wind keeps seaward, he'll have the coast for shelter. He might as well be sailing a river like the Rio de la Plata. But a river with only 1 bank. Who cares as long as you've got a good wind? And it's a good one when it's behind you." Vasquez was obviously enjoying the cheerful repartee with his colleague, who now came back with, "Right, but what if the wind turns around?" "That, Felipe, would be bad luck, which is one thing I hope the Santa Fe won't have. She could do her 1,500 miles and be anchored in Buenos Aires in a fortnight. Now, if the wind veered westerly, there'd be no port to shelter in, neither on land nor on water. As you say, lad, there's not a port in the whole of Tierra del Fuego or Patagonia. Not one. So if they don't want to hit dry land, they'd better hit the high seas. But actually, Vasquez, the weather looks as though it'll hold." "I think so, Felipe. We're coming into the fine season. 3 great months. That's really something. They finished work at just the right time." "I know, lad, I know. Early December here is what northern sailors would call early June. Of course, there's the squalls that'll think nothing of sinking a ship as easy as whipping your sou'wester off, but they don't happen all that often. And once the Santa Fe's in port, the storms can rage as much as the devil wants. No fear, our island's not going to topple into the deep, lighthouse and all. Hopefully, Vasquez, anyway, when they bring news from home and come back with the relief team." "In 3 months, Felipe." "Yes, 3 months, but this island won't go anywhere in that time."
"Nor will we," replied Vasquez, rubbing his hands.
He had just taken a long puff of his pipe, and smoke surrounded him.
"See here, lad, this isn't like being aboard some boat rocked back and forth by the storm. Or, say this is a boat moored to the tail of America, and she's not going to drag anchor. Not that these aren't rough waters. It's only fair to say the Cape Horn seas are ill-famed. Why, a man couldn't even count the number of wrecks on these coasts. A looter couldn't find a better place to make his fortune. But that's all going to change, Felipe. Staten Island has a lighthouse now. All the hurricanes from every corner of the horizon couldn't blow it out. Ships'll see it, and they'll have time to change course, with the beacon to guide them. No danger of running onto those rocks at Cape Tucuman or several points. Not even when you can't see your hand in front of your face. We're the ones to keep the lantern shining, and we'll do it properly."
Vasquez's tone of conviction touched Felipe. Perhaps the latter did not feel quite as light-hearted about the long weeks he would be spending on this deserted island, cut off from humanity, until the trio were relieved. But this aspect did not seem to bother Vasquez, for he concluded,
"See here, lad, I've spent these 40 years sailing every sea in the old world and new. Cabin boy, midshipman, sailor, and officer. Well, now that I'm getting on, I couldn't hope for better than keeping a lighthouse. And not just any, the lighthouse at the end of the world."
And at the tip of this forsaken island, at the limit of inhabited and inhabitable lands, the name was apt.
"Say, Felipe," added Vasquez.
His pipe had gone out and he was tapping it on his hand.
"When do you relieve Maurice?"
"At 10, until 2 in the morning."
"Good. After that it's me on until first light.
So, the most sensible thing is for us to get some sleep."
"To bed then, Felipe, to bed."
Vasquez and Felipe went up to the little perimeter around the lighthouse and into the living quarters. The door closed behind them. They spent a peaceful night. Vasquez concluded it by putting out the light which had been burning for 12 hours. The tide is not usually strong in the vast Pacific, especially along the American and Asian coasts. But Atlantic tides are vigorous, and their force is felt even on the most distant shores of the Magallanes. The sea began going out at 6 in the morning. If the sloop had wanted to take advantage of the tide, she would have needed to sail at daybreak, but she was not quite ready, so the captain planned to leave Elgor Bay on the evening tide. The Santa Fe of the Argentine Navy was of 200 tons burden and 160 horsepower. Her captain and first officer headed a crew of about 50, including the petty officers. She had been assigned to coastal patrol from the mouth of the Rio de la Plata to Lemaire Strait on the Atlantic Ocean. Marine engineering had not yet designed cruisers, torpedo boats, and other fast ships, and the Santa Fe's propeller gave her a speed of only 9 knots. But that would do for policing the coasts of Patagonia and Tierra del Fuego, frequented only by fishing boats. That year, the government of Argentina was building a lighthouse on Staten Island at the mouth of Lemaire Strait, and had detailed the Santa Fe to transporting the men and equipment for construction. They had followed the plans of a skilled Buenos Aires engineer, and the lighthouse was now finished. The Santa Fe had been moored at the end of Elgor Bay for about 3 weeks. After unloading 4 months of provisions, and so ensuring the new lighthouse keepers would have plenty of supplies until the relief came, Captain Lafayette would take the construction workmen back on board. Had there not been an unexpected delay in completing the work, the Santa Fe would have returned to her home port a month earlier. Captain Lafayette had no reason to worry. His anchorage at the end of the bay was sheltered from northerlies, southerlies, and westerlies. Only bad weather from the open sea could have caused him problems. But at the beginning of summer, he was hopeful that the Magellanic waters would see merely brief disturbances. It was 7 o'clock when the captain and first officer Regal left their cabins in the wings of the poop at the aft end of the ship. The sailors had almost finished scrubbing the deck and were pushing the last of the water down through the scupper. The sloop would not be sailing until afternoon, but the chief petty officer was already making preparations as he saw to the removal of the sail covers, the polishing of the brasswork around the air shafts, binnacles and deck lights, and the securing of the longboat, leaving the smaller boat available for use. At sunrise, the colours were hoisted on the brigantine. 3/4 of an hour later, 4 bells sounded forward, and the sailors proceeded to their duties. After a shared breakfast, the two officers returned to the poop to observe the atmospheric conditions, which were fairly good, since the wind was landward. Then they instructed the petty officer to set them ashore. The captain's agenda that morning was to make one final inspection of the lighthouse and its annexes, the keeper's quarters and the storerooms containing the provisions and fuel, ascertaining that all was in order. Accordingly, he and the first officer went ashore. As they made their way to the lighthouse perimeter, they spoke of the three men who would remain in the sad solitude of Staten Island.
"This is a hard assignment," said the captain. "Operating a lighthouse is not easy work, even when in daily contact with the land. Not the case here. Of course, we have to remember these are good men, used to a tough life. Two of them are former sailors."
"Absolutely," replied Regal. "But it's one thing to be a lighthouse keeper on a busy coast, and quite another to live on a deserted island where ships never put in. The only reason they sight this island is to give it the widest possible berth."
"Admittedly, Regal, that's why we'll relieve Vasquez, Felipe and Maurice in 3 months. And this is the best season for them to start such an assignment."
"Yes, sir. They'll be spared those terrible Cape Horn winters."
"Terrible, yes. When we did a little reconnaissance in the strait a few years ago, from Tierra del Fuego to Tierra de la Desolación, between Cape Virgins and Cape Pilar, I got to know those tempests by heart. But after all, the keepers do have a solid house, and no storm is going to blow it down. They'll have plenty of food and coal, even if their term of duty overruns by 2 months. We're leaving them in good health, and they'll be in good health when we see them again. Even if the air seems cold, at least it's clean at this entrance to the Atlantic and the Pacific. And there's something else, Regal. When the Maritime Authority asked for volunteers to run the lighthouse at the end of the world, the only problem was how to choose."
The two officers had just reached the perimeter, where Vasquez and his colleagues were waiting for them. The gate opened for them and they paused, returning the trio's salutes. Captain Lafayette studied the three men, from their feet in heavy sea boots to their waxed hoods, and then he spoke.
"Was everything in order last night?"
"Everything, Captain," replied Vasquez.
"No ships sighted to sea?"
"None, sir."
"Nor in La Mer Strait?"
"Nor there, sir, and the sky was clear. We would have seen a light at least 4 miles away."
"Did the lamps function properly?"
"Yes, sir, from sunset to sunrise."
"Was it cold in the duty room?"
"No, sir, not a draught. The double glazing keeps the wind out."
"We will take a look at the living quarters, and then the lighthouse."
"Aye, aye, sir."
Below the tower, the thick walls of the quarters could resist any Magellanic gusts of wind. The two officers visited the well-appointed rooms, safe from rain, cold and snowstorms, which can be formidable at an almost Antarctic latitude. A central corridor led to a gate to the tower.
"Let's go up," said Captain Lafayette.
"Aye, aye, sir.
Only you need come."
Vasquez made a sign to his colleagues to stay at the end of the corridor. Then he opened the gate and the two officers followed him up. The narrow spiral, with stone steps set solidly in the walls, was bright, for a loophole lit each floor. Reaching the duty room, one level below the lantern and apparatus, the two officers sat on a circular bench running round the wall. The entire horizon was visible through the 4 small windows. The wind was moderate, but blew quite strongly at this height, mixed in with the sharp cries of seagulls, frigate birds and albatrosses, which flew by on powerful wing strokes. Captain Lafayette and his first officer positioned themselves in front of each window, checking it was in good condition. Then, for a better view of the island and surrounding sea, they climbed the ladder to the gallery around the lantern. The part of the island stretching westwards before their eyes was as deserted as the sea to the east and south. Equally deserted lay the strait to the north, too wide for its northern shore to be seen. At the foot of the tower curved Elgor Bay, busy with the sailors' comings and goings, as well as the Santa Fe at anchor. Not a single sail or smokestack visible to sea. Nothing but the oceanic immensity. After a quarter of an hour on the lighthouse gallery, the two officers, followed by Vasquez, went down again and returned to their ship. After lunch, Captain Lafayette and First Officer Regal were set ashore once more. The hours before setting sail would be devoted to a walk along the left bank of Elgor Bay. Several times, and without a pilot, for it will be appreciated there were none on Staten Island, the captain had sailed in daylight to his usual mooring in the little inlet at the foot of the lighthouse, but he always took the precaution of carrying out a reconnaissance. So the two officers studied certain sea marks as they strolled. Sailing presented no difficulties here if one took care. The depth sufficed for a vessel like the Santa Fe anywhere in the bay, even at slow tide. And now, thanks to the lighthouse, the bay would be easily navigable at night. "What a pity," said the captain, "that the approaches to this bay are so dangerous, with all those reefs stretching so far out to sea. Otherwise, ships in distress could anchor here. Remember, there's nothing else after the Strait of Magellan." What he said was only too true, but it will be a long time before a chart shows a harbour at the end of Elgor Bay on the east coast of Staten Island. At 4 o'clock, the two officers took leave of Vasquez, Felipe and Maurice and went back on board. The three stayed on shore in preparation for the ship's departure. At 5 o'clock, pressure rose in the sloop's boiler as she belched forth whirlwinds of black smoke. The tide would soon be turning, and as soon as it began to descend, the Santa Fe would be weighing anchor. At 5:45, the captain gave orders to heave the capstan. The screw was ready and steam leaked from the pipes. At the bow, the first officer monitored operations. The anchor was soon apeak and secured in the cathead. The Santa Fe got under way to the farewells of the three lighthouse keepers. Whatever Vasquez's thoughts and whatever his comrades' feelings as they watched the sloop depart, her officers and crew felt deeply for the three men they were leaving on this island at the tip of America. The Santa Fe took her time as she followed the curves of Elgor Bay. Shortly before 8 o'clock, she reached the open sea. Rounding Cape San Juan, she sailed at full steam into the strait. When night fell, the beacon from the lighthouse at the end of the world had faded to a star grazing the horizon.